Blog Talk Radio.
Satellite Guys Radio presents another edition of Satellite Nation with your hosts, Michael and Dave. We look forward to taking your calls. Do you have a comment for the show? Or maybe you have a question for us? If so, we look forward to your call at 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Dave.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the 46th edition of Satellite Nation here on Blog Talk Radio only tonight, I think. It's your host, Michael, K-E-4-E-S-T, on Satellite Guys. And we're going to have Dave again with us tonight. He said he might hit and miss a couple of shows until for another month or so, but for the most part, it's probably going to be me solo until I find a co-host. So, anyway, I don't know what's been going on around the country you're at or wherever you're listening at, but here in the southeast United States, we're not really used to a whole lot of snow. Now, when I was a kid, it was nothing. I mean, we get a foot or so of snow a couple times a year, and then we'd have, in between that, we'd have, you know, 5-6 inch snows. Nothing, you know, we didn't think nothing about it. We carried chains in the back of our cars. You know, our parents did, you know, and grandparents and everybody knew had chains in their cars. And everybody had a pair of chains. So there was no, you know, calling in to work or work shutting down or school closing or whatever. I mean, there was some school closing because of, I guess, the children and buses and stuff is a bit more worried about, but they wouldn't have a whole lot as they was now. Now it seems like as soon as somebody thinks it's going to snow, they call off school down here. But, you know, Carson said, you know, you went to work, and you ain't work, you better be sick. It's like it is up north. As I've grown up, moving around, you know, over the years, working different places, several states, all the way up to New York, down to Georgia, on the eastern seaboard. That's the way I've noticed it is up north. Unless it's something really, really bad, blizzard or something like that, you know, school runs, you know, you go to work, that's it. You know, there's no, but around here, they call flurries of snow and, you know, and nobody is anymore around here used to driving this unless they're from somewhere else and they don't have driving. Even if they got a 4-drive vehicle that's, you know, in really good shape, good tires, and, you know, a nice one that's made for it. Because some 4-drive vehicles, yeah, they might be 4-drive, but they're long wheel bay trucks or light rear ends, in, you know, light bed, you know, or this, that, and the other. And it's not, it's 4-drive, but it's still not the best 4-drive vehicle, like a little small, you know, like a Jeep is, you know. Regular old CJ5 Jeep, where it's, you know, really, really short wheel base. So, here, the way it's been here lately, they call it off. Snow comes in, and why did that come back on? Let me mute that. Hello. I was wondering why I was hearing a little weird echo. down here, we've been getting snow, and everything's kind of shut down. Of course, the schools are closed, and today, everything's kind of closed. A lot of businesses, grocery stores, everything shut down. And they even got a thing out that you can actually get a ticket if you're out, which I mean, I'm sure they do it in other areas. They're starting to do it here now. When they say, okay, the area's shut down, if you're out and about driving around in it and you have no really, really, really good reason to be out in it, they can give you a ticket. And also, the insurance companies around here starting to, if you're out in the snow and it's bad and you have no good reason to be out in the snow and you slide off or flip your vehicle over or just slide off and hit a guardrail or something or a tree, and not a whole lot of damage, just enough to fender bender or something like that, they won't pay. Because, hey, you should know better, you know. So that's the way I've been seeing around here. So I don't know what's going on everywhere else, but it, that's the way it is here. And that's what's been going on here. And, of course, a lot of the people that's listening, that listens a lot, the regular listeners know that I'm on satellite internet. I mean, I've got the top, you know, package order for satellite internet, but it's still, it's been coming and going all day because it'll snow, and it's been real heavy, wet snow. And even though it's not snowing real, real bad, even my dish network's been going out. And I was on air with the bigger dishes and not the C-band. Now, C-band was working all right, but the, you know, the 1.2 meter dishes, you know, on KU and stuff, it was kind of coming and going just because of this. And it looks, you know, at 2 o'clock today, it looked like it was, you know, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, getting ready to get dark. Sometimes it was so dark with the snow clouds, so they're so heavy. But anyway, that's what's been going around here, and everybody, you know, around me in this general area is either freaking out or having fun or whatever. So, but generally just freaking out, like, what's going on here, you know, whatever. And, I know the people in other places are probably laughing, you know, about it and whatever, but it's funny. But I heard there's places worse than this. I thought it was bad here, but I heard there's places it's a lot worse, and so it's kind of funny that it can be worse than this. But I think people should start at least carrying chains in their vehicles again, and, you know, whatever. But I know other places they do, but like up north and stuff, but down here they just don't do it anymore. But maybe they don't. I don't know. I don't know what happened to that trend. I was actually wondering about it one day and looked it up, and yeah, you can buy chains. You can go to the parts store right here in town, 2 or 3 parts stores, and buy chains. So, but anyway, other than that, I didn't see a whole lot of really lot of news going on, you know, in the satellite world. I might be missing something, but I'm just not thinking right now. And I was looking over before the showtime and just kind of going over a couple different websites, and of course, skimming over Satellite Guys, and I just. Nothing. The only thing I know that, Dish Network's brought back the silver and gold packs, and I don't know if they're showing yet on the website, but if you call them up or get a hold of one of the DIRT members, the DIRT DIRT members, Dish Internet Response Team, they can set you up, and they've brought back the silver and gold packs now, so you can get those again. So, but other than that, which that's kind of exciting and kind of not exciting, and depends on how you want to look at it. But other than that, didn't see a whole lot going on, you know. So don't forget you can call us in here at 1-800-SAT-GUYS or 1-347-327-9319. And chit-chat with me here, and we'll get some more stuff, and we've got Joe going to be in here, and I think he's in here right now. Let me see if I can bring him in from Fridge FTA, and he's got a few things he wants to talk about, and just general chit-chat with him, and I think he's got a couple of things, and so let me go ahead and bring him in here. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Michael. Did I hear you complaining about a little bit of cold weather and snow?
I'm not. I was just finding interesting that how it was when I was a child. It was, it's global warming, you know, but it was common. Everybody had chains, you know, carried chains in their trunks of their cars, and you didn't, you know, you didn't, wasn't no calling out to work, and businesses stayed open, and then went for a few years. I didn't really get into it because I seen that you called in there, but they was people that, I mean, they went a few for years there, we had really mild winters here. Last winter was pretty mild, and you hardly see any snow, no school outings, no closings of any kind of businesses, and, you know, no big deal. People just got away from it, and now they, you know, don't do it, and the next generation coming up's not, you know, they're not used to driving snow, no high driving snow. You know, it's kind of interesting, kind of funny in a way, but I heard people about 10 years ago say, oh, it's global warming, but now it's coming back. Last few years, it's getting back to where it's heavy snows every year, and it's colder, and So I don't think anything about the global warming. I think it's just a cycle it goes through.
Well, I mean, what you need to do is what we've been doing here in Minnesota for years. We've been praying to Al Gore that the global warming fantasy could be true. Because we're hitting, you know, record lows and record low wind chills here in Minnesota. So something isn't working out with the global warming theory.
I know. We had a few years of time. I mean, we had snow and stuff, but it wasn't real bad. It was like when it was going up. And I remember last year, it was a pretty mild winter here. I guess just the way everything worked out, you know. And the temperatures got down cold sometimes, but we didn't really get a whole lot of snow. And of course, here in the mountains, you know, temperatures get cold up and, you know, higher in elevation. But not a whole lot of snow, really. I mean, a little blowing snow here and there, but nothing, to, you know, to write home to mama about. But people's, you know, yelling, oh, it's global warming. But what about this year? What happened to global warming?
Yeah, it's not exactly working out. Yeah, this year in Minnesota, if it, you know, hasn't been 20 below, you know, Fahrenheit actual temperature, it's been snowing. So it's like, you know, every time I need to go out and work on the dish, I have a good excuse not to go out. And I'm getting sick of it because I need to do some tweaks on my dish and get some more testing going on here. But
yeah,
just not getting the weather conditions this year. Now, if Al Gore could, you know, raise the global temperatures 10 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, in the next couple of years, we'd really appreciate it here in Minnesota. And I bet the people down in Atlanta that are dealing with the big snowstorm right now would really appreciate it, too.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That's another thing. Atlanta, you know, that's way further, well, not way further south. It's about an hour and a half drive or so. Hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on how fast you're going. But, and traffic in the time of day, because you get near Atlanta, you know, I don't know how many times you've been to Atlanta, but Atlanta's bad as traffic. And if you look it up, Atlanta's got the 10th largest city in the United States, but it's the number one for traffic, worst traffic. It's worse than New York City because they have no subways, no this, no that. It's, you know, everybody drives, and it's a big mess. And, oh, it's hitting them like crazy because they don't know what to do down there. But it's usually
I've never hit Georgia. I think the closest I've been is outside of Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah, because Atlanta, it's a mess down there, I tell you.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Hey, I got a question for you, Michael. Do you think your listeners would be interested in hearing about satellite down in New Zealand and Australia?
A satellite down?
Down under. You think your user or listeners would be interested in hearing about it from somebody down in New Zealand?
Yeah, I've got some that they don't listen live, but I got some they might have once in a while. But I've got some that listens on the podcast throughout the week from Europe and Asia. So, yeah.
Well, I've been trying to get Murray Young from Amaku, New Zealand, who's also a titanium dealer, to call in. He's listening right now. You know, I keep bugging him. You know, call in and tell us about satellite down under, because they have, you know, the way their satellite works is completely different than our free to air. But they run the same. You know, they have the Alien 2s and except they have DVB T2 or T,
right,
and other fun stuff. But I think it'd be really interesting if you could get him to call in one of these days and tell everyone about satellite down there and what he's doing with the titanium and other projects.
Yeah, I'll have to. He's welcome to call in now if he wants to, or if not, he can email me his info and I'll get a hold of him directly and I'll get him on here, that's for sure.
Well, he's listening. He's listening right now and press the Skype button, but we'll see.
Yeah, maybe you do it. I'll be watching for him here, see if he pops in here. But I've been, it's been snowing all day, so I ain't done a whole lot. But I took the wife to work this morning. She went to work, and of course, she wouldn't go by herself. She's got zero snow driving experience. So I took the four-drive truck, took her to work and back. And on the radio, you know, the ham radio, amateur radio, whatever you want to call it, for a while. And I decided to take apart my Sat Hero meter, that SH-200. It's got.
Ooh, I've never done that. Wait, yeah, I have done that once.
Yeah, well, I took it apart one time for something. I don't know what it was, but maybe I was just curious and looking inside of it or something. I don't know. But the up and down buttons on it, you just have to mash them really hard and kind of hold them and fiddle around with them, give them to work. So I thought I'd take it apart and see what's going on. Of course, you got a little piece of plastic thing, you know, that you touch with your thumb that, you know, it's got a little stud on the back. When you mash it in, that matches the actual micro switch in. I thought, I wonder if it's something dirty somewhere, or the little plastic studs. I've had that happen before. They're really, really, they use really cheap plastic or something. They'll wire off. It's not getting good contact. It's not really, you know, when you mash down, it's not mashing hard enough. But, so it turns out I got it apart, but, you know, fired it up while it was apart, and it's the micro switches that's worn out. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah. They've, I can sit there and fill up them things, and I have to mash hard for just to get them to lose the same thing. So I don't know if it's just mine or everyone. I've even sold some of these before, and they complain about them. I don't know. But, so I'm going to see if I can find some micro switches to sort her back in there, some momentary, you know, switches, and straighten that out. Because other than that, the mirror works great, you know, and some people complain about it, so I just can't, you know, have it, and they'll pay more for another meter because, you know, it does DVBS too, but it's got that kind of flicker, you know, on the, you know, it kind of flickers on the S2 signals, but it's kind of annoying, yeah, but it's not, you know, nothing that's going to kill you, you know, it flickers so fast that you still can see where you're at and what's going on, and if you was an installer, you know, it might get annoying.
I know what you're talking about. On the ones, on the S2, that tends to be jumpy like that.
Yeah.
You know, after 5 minutes of watching what it's doing, you can tell exactly what it's, you know, what information it's telling you and where your peak is and all that.
Yeah.
It's, when you look at the price of a SH-200 versus some of these other meters, it's very easy to deal with.
Yeah, especially if you want something to do S2 signals. And there's cheaper ones that won't do S2. And people say, yeah, just get those. And because it's fine to find you just a regular, you know, BBS signal, and you'll be fine. And but it's true, but some satellites, you know, it's hard to find one, or they're going away. Of course, I know they all still got them right now, but sometimes you just want to know, am I hitting that, you know, before I go back in the house? And you have these people, well, just drag your TV out and all this stuff, and that's aggravating. And these people, you know, we'll take you, you know, a remote TV, you know, with a little small TV that runs off batteries and stuff, and rig you up like a 12-volt power pack or something for, take a Nano HD out there or something, which that's fine, too. But,
you know, I used to do that.
Yeah.
And, the minute I got my first real digital satellite meter, I learned really quick that there isn't an STB out there that will give you near the accuracy for peaking signals as a digital satellite meter.
Yeah,
and it's the difference between, well, doing okay and really tweaking in your system having that digital meter.
Yeah, and it won't do it as fast. You know, and some set-top boxes will, but they're a little bit faster, but they're not as fast as, you know, you can just sit there and, if you get everything right and move the dish back and forth, all kinds of things lights up, or you might miss it if you got a set-top box. You have to go really, really slow, and, you know, you still might miss it. But that thing will pick up something. I mean, it might not pick a full signal, but, you know, if you're going too fast, you'll hear a little beep, you know, whoa, whoa, back up. You know, I found something. And that's what I like about it.
Well, the two problems with using a set-top box,
yeah,
is you know, number one, just about every set-type box or chipset has a different way of how they're interpreting the quality. You know, one
yeah.
box could say that this signal is a 72, and
yep.
then you hook up another one and it says it's a 100. The Ollie boxes for DVB-S signals tend to, you know, they have a goofy curve at like 68 and then 70. And to get from like a 72 to a 71, it's like a decibel CN difference. And then 71 to 72 is, you know, another 1.5. You know, it's just totally goofy. Where with a signal meter, you can actually get, you know, real qualitative numbers.
Yeah, that's another thing.
You know, well, and like our like the Alien One, the way that thing works,
yeah,
for DVB-S, it basically, you know, if you have a good signal, it tells you you're at 100.
Yeah,
you can't tweak with that box for a great signal, because it will always tell you you're at 100 once it, you know, gets what it needs.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you think, well, I've got it good. Hey, boy, things pegged out at 100, so you stop. And, yeah, it might work, you know, until, you know, you go to yeah, your dish may not be, you know, fully peaked as much as it can be on that satellite. You know, you're changing our transponder later on, or if you're setting up, you know, a dish on a motor or something or whatever, you think you got it, but you don't. Yeah, well, you got it, but you don't have it, you know, as good as it can be, you know. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand a lot of guys are on a budget, you know.
Oh.
So that's, you know, their only option is to work with the set-top box. But, you know, I highly recommend, and I don't sell any meters in the USA, so it's an unbiased point of view. I highly recommend anyone that can afford it gets, you know, some sort of a digital satellite meter.
Oh, yeah.
That does ask, too.
Oh, yeah, and I'm not knocking anybody that can't afford it. But I'll see people that every new set-top box comes out, they buy two of them, but won't buy a meter. You know? And they'll, you know, I've seen a couple of them, you know, they'll kind of mention, well, them Turbo S2, blah, 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 you know, whatever, Allied, you know, is $900 or $600. And they always say that. I'm like, you know, it's kind of, I don't know what their deal is, why they're trying to, you know, it's just, I don't know what's going on. They try to, you know, evade everything else, and I don't know. It's like they're too proud to go and buy a meter or something, you know.
Well, it's one of those things, too, that, if you haven't tried one, you really don't know what you're missing. Because, you know, I thought I did a damn good job bringing the little TV out and tuning with the set-top box. You know, and I did pretty good until I got a digital meter and realized how good I really wasn't doing or how much better I could do with the meter.
Yeah, I thought that, too. I think that some people, you know, they might not be trying to be a smartass or anything. They really think that, hey, you know, yeah, I buy every set-top box that comes out, but why don't I want to spend even $100-something on the SH200 when I can spend it on another set-top box, you know, because you've got a meter in the box, and I don't care to drag a table and a chair out there and a TV, whatever, to the dish. That's fine, but once you actually get one and start using it, you know, you're just going to, it's not, you know, it's not one of these little inline analog meters that costs $15, you know. It's, you know, it's a big difference, you know, and you can really see.
Oh,
you know,
God, I hate those things.
Oh, yeah, I know. They give me false rates sometimes, oh, gosh. But anyway.
You know, the only useful function I found for one of those is for doing, when we do the set-top box testing here.
Yeah.
Hooked it up with the dummy load on it, and you can see that polarity switching and 22K is working properly on the set-top box.
Yes. Yeah.
those things are just worthless for doing anything, you know, on an actual satellite as far as I'm concerned. But.
Yeah, because, you know, it just pretty much shows you're on a satellite and it's going relative, you know, signal strength of that bird in that general area. It's not, you can't pick out your transponders and, you know, whatever and stuff. And so it might be locking in on a, you know, a commercial transponder or something that's pumping out the wattage or whatever. So, yeah, you never know. It's funny.
Well,
take those.
I don't need to know that I'm near or on a satellite because that could be a worthless DirecTV or just network satellite.
Right.
Or it could be, you know, 61 West KU. There's no way to tell on those meters. I need to know what satellite I'm on, what transponder I'm on,
yeah,
and what actual CN I'm getting. Especially when you're trying to tune a motor, if you're, you know, trying to guess, well, it looks like the dish is pointed at 181 degrees, and well, this little squawker is making squawking noises. You could be totally off and trying to set up your motorized system and just screw it up even worse with one of those fancy things.
Yeah, I stand to get a thought through it. People listen, like, I'm going to get my accelerometer or something, but we're not. We're just
I don't sell the squawkers just because, you know, and when I did, I even had, you know, right on the store site, I hate these things. I think they're worthless, but some people like them, but
yeah,
don't waste your money. But, yeah, at this point, I won't even sell them. It's not worth it to me to, you know, have a guy, you know, waste, you know, 8, 10, 20 bucks, whatever they are on them.
Yeah, I've sold them off and on, and I ain't going to say I won't sell them again because there's some people that want them or whatever. But it's, I mean, it's better than nothing, I guess. But if you're going to do that, I would, if that's their only option, the option they're looking at, that's what I'd recommend, you know. Well, now's time to get your extension cord out and your folding table and your TV and your receiver and take it out to the dish. You'd be better off. But, you know, I don't know, but yeah, I don't like them either.
Yeah, you know, I can see maybe if you got a lot of time to waste and you have a single satellite fixed dish system or you're aiming an old legacy DBS dish with a circular LNBF where you don't have a satellite every 2 degrees,
yeah,
and the circular can't lock on to the linear ones. Maybe there's some justification there, but, I mean, how many people are doing self-installs on DirecTV or Dish Network these days, you know, with the old legacy, you know, SD satellites?
Yeah, that's it. Nobody's doing it. I mean, some people without camping and stuff does a little bit, but it's not like it used to. You could go to Walmart and buy a DirecTV system, you know, with a single dish, a point at 101, a little 18-inch dish and a receiver, and it may even come with the install pack with 100 foot of coax and some cable clips and whatever, and a little compass or something that costs 99 cents, you know, wholesale or something. They're selling it for $5, and it come in a pack for 150 bucks. You take it home and do it yourself, but now, you know, it's just, people just don't do it as much anymore.
That's how I actually got started was cleaning up the messes of the guys that got the DirecTV systems at Kmart and Walmart and couldn't figure out how to aim them.
Yeah, I just same thing. I was an electrician by trade for years. Started off residential and went to industrial and commercial. And what was it, 94, 95, something like that, when DirecTV came out. And next thing, first it was my family and it was friends. I heard you can, you know, so I started figuring it out, you know, because it wasn't hard to figure out. So I started aiming for people, and I said, hey, I want to switch careers here. And right there in the late 90s, I switched over and started to, I didn't go to any special schooling or anything. I just started, I found this guy that was a local retailer and needed a satellite installer, and I started from there and I learned as I went, you know. But anyway, we got another caller here, so let's bring him in here. Good evening. How are you doing?
Hey, it's Robert calling.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah, you're talking about meters. I was out the last couple of weeks. I got a C1 LMB, and I was trying to tune it to get the Leukenmux on 87. I have a Sat Hero. But the weird thing was I was able to get the Leuken signal on my Sat Hero, but I was none of my receivers. I was able to get the get a lock on it, so I couldn't get it on any of my receivers. I have an ASBox, I have a Amoco Mini, and I have an OpenBox S10. But no,
what's your CN that the Sat Hero is reporting?
CN 40.
40? No, that you'd have to have about an 18 meter dish to get a 40.
Yeah.
Well, 40 should lock, but on a receiver. But that's another thing. You know, I'll throw this in about those meters. You know, they'll lock a lot lower than what a receiver will.
Oh, four? Do you mean you had a 4.0 CN?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know what a CN is. I just know what the meter said. It said, I think it was like 3940, whatever that means on the meter.
Oh, I bet you're looking at the decibels per microvolt. I'd have to look up and see what that goes with.
Yeah.
With a digital meter, for doing a practical install, I can only look at the CN. Because that's what's going to tell you whether your receiver can get it. And, you know, your minimum, I can't tell you based on that 40 if it's a decibel microvolts you're talking about. But CN-wise, you're going to have a different threshold for different type of signals. Like, you know, some stuff you can get in on a STB at a 5.5 or a 6 decibel CN. Other muxes, you know, like the NBC S2 on 103 West, for example, you know, sometimes you need a 9 or a 10 for those before the STB is going to start to see it. You know, just because your Sat Hero can see it doesn't mean that the STB is going to.
Yeah, that's a fine note.
I've also had instances, too, where I was using the a Shaw Direct dish to get the PBS feeds, and I was having a hard time locking that, but that's was a scenario where I got the receiver and the TV set outside just to make sure I had the picture, because whenever, with that mux, now that it's S2, the picture will come in good, but then it'll only be reading about 20% or 20 to 34%. It varies on the clearness of the day, but sometimes the picture quality is just fine. It's just it's giving a low quality reading.
That is we were talking about earlier how these STBs are all different with what they'll report back for quality on the meters, but the signals are all different too. Some signals you can get in with, Louisiana PBS over on 87. You know, I've gotten that in perfectly where my STB is reporting back. I got, zero quality or, five quality or something like that. You know, they all have different thresholds, depending on, how they're doing their signal and everything as to, how they'll come in and, what levels they'll come in at.
Yeah, I found with that. PBS on 87, and when I first got that, I was barely getting any quality. But now it seems to be downstairs on my open box, I'm getting 70 to 72%, some maybe even higher on a clear day.
Yeah, I found that one at least here in Minnesota with the various equipment I've tried. That seems to be all over the place, depending on time of day and whatever other factors. But it's one of those that seems to come in for me. Even when it's reading real weak, I'm getting watchable pictures on that.
You talking about 87?
Yeah, the LPBS mux.
Yeah, that's the same way. I was looking through the things on control panel, and I kind of tuned out for a second, but yeah. it's the same way here. It's so funny. It's and sometimes I'll I guess you know dish peaked out, you know, but it'll kind of come and go. And I don't know if everybody in power or if it's just the way it is. I don't know. But the micro HD, it'll kind of sit there and break up. But even though it's showing a 70 quality, I put the nano HD in and it'll stay in. Or I put another receiver in and stay in, and then I've got, I don't know, a bunch of receivers, but whatever I'm playing with at the time. But I'll switch another receiver in, it'll hold it, and so I won't. It's just, even though the quality's showing, you know, in the 70s or 100, if it's one of those weird set-top boxes that shows everything 100. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, my alien one.
I wish they had the World Channel on that on 87, because it seems that 87 comes in a lot better than 125 for me, at least for me right now. I've been trying to tune my dish, but I've had some windy days, and I guess it's gotten knocked out. Also, I have it against the fence, so when the wind really hits that fence, it kind of blows the dish a little bit, so I have to go out and retune it.
What's
that?
So
that's where I got line of sight, so that's where I put it.
I'm not happy in general with the nationwide PBS affiliates, because I think PBS World is one of their best channels.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, like here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul DMA, we don't have that available. The only way that I can get that is I think Filmon has it streaming still. Or if I go to 125 West, you can't get it over the air here. You can't get it over the air in a lot of different markets.
Same way here.
Yeah, I got one over the air on a clear day. I can get it, but it's but when it's bad weather, I don't get. And that's the one that's World Channel, and I get another one that comes in perfectly over the air. I will get one over the air channel 16, but it doesn't have a World Channel. It has Create, and it has, you know, your standard cartoons, or, you know, kids programming during the daytime and all that. And nighttime they do, but usually that's not when I'm watching TV. They'll have the World programs that will be on World. That's just where I got to set my PVR, I guess, to tape some of that stuff or to record some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Our PBS here will occasionally play some of the stuff that's on World.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want that. I want to be able to watch what's on World 24/7 as a regular channel.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
They've done the same way here, Joe, like Robert's talking about it. Was there's a couple of PBSs I can get over the air, or even through Dish Network, whichever way you want to do it. But they was, you know, showing different shows and different stuff during the day. They mixed in with cartoon, you know, the PBS Kids, I guess, and with it. But now it's PBS all the way from 6 o'clock morning to 6 o'clock in the evening, all day. And then at 7 o'clock they'll have, or 6 o'clock they'll have PBS News Hour. And then after that they show different shows, but it's all through the night. And so you have to, like Robert said, you have to set your DVR to record it if you want it. It's not during the day when you're watching TV normally.
I should stop now with a little tidbit, because I think if you don't have them this week, you're going to have them soon. Quite a few listeners from New Zealand and Australia, and your listeners from Europe. What we call OTA, or over there here, is what you guys call digital terrestrial. It gets really confusing when I'm talking to people from Europe or China or New Zealand, because they have no clue when we say OTA what that means.
Oh, I bet so. So, yeah, go ahead and anytime to throw stuff like that in there when we say that. Because and I need to remember to do that, too, sometimes. And but what you pick up on with it.
I'm to the point where the majority of people that I talk to on a daily or nightly basis, because of the hour differences, are in Europe or China. So, you know, I have to actually bite my tongue to not say terrestrial when I'm talking to Americans or Canadians. You know, I got to remember to say OTA, because if I say terrestrial here, everyone here gets confused.
Oh, I know what you mean. I've talked to you a couple times on the show. You'll come there if I'm talking to you not on the show. You'll say certain things, and it's almost like I'm talking to a couple of guys I know over in UK. You use some of the same lingo sometimes, and I talk to them too, but not as much as you do. But I watch a lot of shows on YouTube from the UK and stuff, and they're not like sitcoms or anything, but actual YouTube channels and some guys have got it for different things. And so I've kind of got used to the lingo over there, so it don't faze me. But yeah, you're right. A lot of people be like, huh? what are you talking about?
Hey, Joe.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUY or 877-728-4897.
Got you there, Robert.
Hey,
go ahead. Go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I was appreciating the update for the Amoco Mini for the web TV. It's kind of a fun feature I've been playing with this week, and I've been enjoying the Amoco channel. I've seen some old westerns and stuff like that. I don't know how that channel comes about, but it seems like there's some public domain stuff on it that I've been enjoying.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Amoco TV channel?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's if you want to know a little bit about it, that's ran off of a computer here directly. The content all comes from, public domain, Creative Commons, and there's a few that we have permission that we can air on there. But it's a wide variety of documentaries, documentary movies, old television shows, movies, dating back from the 30s to, present day, basically anything and everything that's on there.
Yeah, I like the documentaries on there. Because, I was always wishing there was, a really good free-to-air channel that had a lot of, good documentaries. And I think one I was watching was the one with it was about scripts by the guy, same guy who did a documentary about bulletin board systems back in the late 70s, early 80s, when that was the big thing before the Internet. So I found that one, one about text scripts was an interesting one.
You're talking about GitLamp with the old text-based role-playing games?
Yeah. I was enjoying that one.
Oh, yeah, that and the BBS one, really bring flashbacks to my old Apple IIe with the Hayes modem with a 300 BPS maximum speed and dialing in the different BBSs to, get software you weren't supposed to have and all sorts of fun back in those days.
Hey, guys, let's try and get another caller here from, looks like Michigan, 2310 the code.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I heard you talking about the Amoco aliens, and I've been reading a few things on the forum where there's been some mention of the fact that I guess you can, if I understand it, you can go into them through a web interface or something from another computer. Can you explain how that works and what actually you can do through that?
Sure. Well, there's FTP that you can get into, but that's probably not what you're interested in. What you need to do is, do you know how to determine the IP address for your Alien or Alien 2 or whatever you have?
Well, I don't actually have one yet. I was just wondering about it because it's something that is of interest to me, and it's one that I was considering getting, so...
Okay. Well, it's for the web interface. It's real easy. You figure out what your local IP is, and you go into Firefox or Internet Explorer or whatever you have, and you type in that web address. The web interface comes up for the receiver, and you can schedule a re- recordings. You can, do all sorts of things with the channels. And you can also live stream any of your satellite channels from the receiver to the web interface or to something like VLC on the computer.
Oh, great. Okay. But you can't actually schedule programs from that interface.
Actually, you know, I was looking at it the other day for a guy that was having an issue, and I think I did see an option where you can do the record scheduling and the timers and all that on there. You can basically control just about every function that you can do with the remote control from the web interface.
Oh, great. Okay, that's what I was wondering. Now, how many timers do those have?
The Alien and Alien 2 have 50 event timers.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. All right, that's what I was wondering. So that pretty much answers my question. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, there is one more cool feature with the live web streaming. If you're still here and listening, assuming you have the right codec on your computer, you can live stream 422 to your computer, to your HTPC, to your Android tablet, or whatever you have. You can get the 422 live out of it.
All right. Well, that's what I was wondering, so thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
That was pretty cool. You helped him out there, Joe.
Well, so since we're talking about the Alien and Alien 2, you want to hear about the new feature that's coming out really, really soon?
Yeah, let's hear about it.
All right, there's a guy on the Fridge FTA site named Gunny. Good friend of mine, real great guy. We put up Weather Nation on our legacy web TV system.
Yeah.
And he happened to mention that, the channel label for, it's like on channel 8 or channel 9, says future use. And he's like, do I have to load a file, or will that change itself?
Yeah.
And he gave me an idea to write a Linux script that would take care of that, because it's the one thing we couldn't do server-side. Long story short, I had some problems with retrieving the script or retrieving the new file.
Yeah.
So I got on Skype with one of our engineers.
Yeah.
Who, he couldn't figure out, or we couldn't figure out what the particular issue was. He's like, okay, I have something better for you. And he sent me a file which allows us to build all new features into the system. Instead of a single web TV file with fixed channels,
right,
the new system can run as many web TV files as you want from different servers all over the place. Everything fully automatically updates. It's got the little icons for each channel. It's really cool.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, so, I've been, he kept me up later than I've been up for a long time, till like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I slept late, but most of the day-to-day I've been working on this and kind of sidelined my other top-secret projects. But basically, we're going to have an all-new web TV system, which is a lot more dynamic and we'll run a lot more channels and do some really cool things.
That's right.
I would say in the next 2 or 3 days we'll have it set up and running for Alien and Alien 2.
Alien and Alien 2, okay. That's what I was getting ready to ask you. That's pretty cool. I'd be interested. And email me about that too. I have an Alien and Alien 2, but email me so I'll kind of be in the know what's going on with that when it gets going. Put me on the email list for that.
Well, for the other boxes, we finally got our web TV system launched. One of our guys from Amoco in Europe, in Hungary.
Yeah.
Went to China to visit with the engineers. So they took our wish list of what we wanted in the 8240 and the Mini HD and the Nano. He took that with them. Got the web TV working. I got the web TV working right with our servers. So we got the server-side updates on it. They put in one thing that was annoying to the big disk guys with the Nano and the 8240 was how it automatically picks a DISEC 1.2 number.
Yeah.
For motor controls. We now have that where you can set your own number right in the receiver, you know, which is the way it should be, but, you know, for Europe, they never cared until we mentioned it. We got rid of the problem where you do a blind scan on, say, 87 West, and you exit out, and it goes to the first channel on your list, which could be on 30 West, and we got rid of that problem. Apparently, you know, I'm sure you know with the a lot of the alley receivers.
Yep.
Our 8240 was a big problem with this. The real-time clocks are just crappy for accuracy.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow our engineer fixed that. I didn't even test for it. What else do we have in there? But the customers, the people that own them are all reporting, hey, my clock suddenly is keeping time. It's not drifting 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And what else did they do? Oh, 99 West, where we can scan the couple channels.
Yeah.
Apparently that's fixed. I wasn't able to test for it.
Remember, I mentioned that to you a few months ago.
They did a lot specifically for North America. So we got all those files out now, with the exception of Nano. They're telling me 1 or 2 days because I guess they found some sort of bug that they want to fix first.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely. Then Mini HD SE, which I still haven't released for North America yet, that one's going to be coming at the same time as the Nano HD.
What is that one?
The new one with the Alley 3511.
What's the name of the box?
Mini HD SE, second edition.
Oh, Mini HD. Okay.
Second edition. There's two of them. They Europe sometimes likes to make it really confusing for us. Our original Mini HDs already have this file, so. They've got all the new toys.
You didn't hit me up with one of those Mini HD second editions.
What's that?
I said, you need to hit me up with one of those Mini HD second editions.
The only person in North America that has an SE other than me is Jennifer, because she does the alley boxes.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, getting them ready and testing them and programming them.
Yeah.
He has one, I have one. No one else gets one until I'm happy with the firmware and it's time to release them.
Right, yeah, but I don't blame you on that, Jay. There's so many people in manufacturers, of course, a lot of these, you know, open boxes, you know that. They flame them out. It's not so bad right now, but there for a couple of years, 3 years or so, they was flaming them out like it was nothing, you know, and... without testing anything, just sling them out there, just a different model number, just to try to get the sales, you know. And, yeah, if you want to make a name for yourself or, yeah, whatever, you definitely don't.
And guys here in America will do it too. They'll release a half working product and say, oh, we'll fix it later.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And to me, you know, especially with Mini HD SE, since I haven't released them for North America, why would I want to start selling them today and then have everyone have to go through frustrations and an upgrade procedure next week when I can just wait, you know, a week or two or a month or whatever it takes and get as much as we can right before the unit ship.
Right. Yeah, that's how I did it. Have you, let me mention this, have you got one of the AST ones that Brian's selling, the Titan Satellite?
You know, I don't have the AST one, and the reason why I don't have an AST one is because my biggest dish is a 1 meter, so I don't have any use for the AST one.
Well, that's why I asked you. I didn't know if you may have had one or not, because I know you didn't really have a use for it, but...
Brian had offered to send me one.
Yeah.
And, normally, I'm happy to get free samples of things.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't believe in getting free samples of things that that either you can't use or, or that you don't intend to sell. So, I told him, thank you, but, I can't use it out here.
Yeah.
Probably send it to somebody that can, do a lot more with it than I could.
Yeah, there's no sense in abusing it because, I've seen people do the same thing. They, send me that, and from different resellers and stuff. Oh, yeah, I'll take a free one, and it's I ain't going to mention any names or anything like that, but I know of cases where, they got them, and that's about it. They probably never hooked them up just because it was free, and... But I was just curious, but I was just going to mention we're getting close to top of the hour here, and I'm probably going to close out here pretty quick. But unless you've got something else, Joe, you want to talk about?
Did you want to hear about the new top secret box?
I ain't closing out yet. I just said before we close, I just want to go ahead and know what I'm thinking about it. I had Brian on our last week. He mentioned about ASD ones, how you get the fix done and stuff, and. He actually released out the fix if you want to fix your old box, but everybody got a new free box. All the early adopters got one. Everybody bought one, got a new one sent to you free, and it's fixed up. And so they ran into a little hardware bug there, but and he's also got a new software he released out for it. New firmware. It came out Monday, I think it was. But I was honestly with that one, it's working perfect on mine. Everything's working now because the microwave HD wouldn't talk to it properly, and the nano HD did right off the bat. But the microwave HD was having issues. But once I did the hardware modification, because I went and I fixed the one I've got, the first one I got, I fixed it myself, and changing some parts out and stuff, and it's then I got the new firmware working. I don't like the ramp in and ramp out still on it when you're using the remote control. Hold down the button to tell it to move the dish east and west. It takes off of going, and you let go of the button, and, with the ramp out still a little bit too long for me. When I let go of the button, I don't want to hit the brakes, slam on the brakes, but I want it to ramp out just a little bit from what it does. Kind of push on the brakes really hard, but not slam on them.
Weren't you guys talking about this last week as to, that there was some debate about how that function should work?
Yeah. Yeah, now, I'm hoping, I sent a message to Brian earlier, but I think he won't get here tonight, but.
Yeah, if I understood what you guys were talking about right, I think Brian actually hit it on the head that, a lot of receivers have two different lines for moving that motor. One is continuous and the other one is step.
Yep.
To me, our Amicos have that. I rarely use the continuous.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those guys where I want my dish to stop right where I think it should when I click the button.
Right.
So to me, if you have one of the receivers that has continuous and step, you know, you can't really, you know, continuous, it's going to make a nice, you know, slow move and probably should, you know, ramp down a little instead of, you know, just jerk to a stop. If you want it to suddenly stop, use the step move. Because you can, at least in the Amicos, and I think the open boxes were like that too, you could hold the button down, just like continuous move, and then let it go and it would stop just about right where you think it should.
Yeah.
Use the continuous if you want it to, you know, not come to a quite sudden of a stop.
Right. I'm talking about the remote that comes with it, like using it for, you know, as a standalone. So you're not using the receiver, using the receiver to talk to the ASC one. So you want to take the remote control that comes with it, and it works the same way. If you just bump the button, it'll go one click. If you hold it down for over like a second or something, it takes off. And you let go of it, it still goes, to me, further than what I'd like it to.
Okay, I see. You're talking just using standalone and
yeah.
Well, yeah, that I don't know. I don't know what to tell you for that.
I'm not really asking you. We're just talking about. I just wanted to say that. I just want to mention that he's got. I think he's got all the replacements shipped out and everything, and that's the only thing, you know, the new firmware. He's got out and all that. I was just saying that it's still, you know, but you know, you can't please everybody. But that's the thing you got to be careful about. And what I was going to say was, I'm hoping there's some way he can come in, and probably can, but may not be on the priority list. But add a feature where you can go in the menu and say, okay, if I want to slam the brakes, let me slam the brakes. I want to check that box, you know. of course, I don't want to necessarily slam the brakes. I just want to kind of, you know, when I let go of that button, I want it to start slowing down right then. But it's still, you know, but other than that, though, that thing works great. And I've got I put a chaparral back on there with the polar rotor instead of, you know, regular voltage-controlled LMBF. I've got a feed horn with the LMB and everything. And, boy, it works sweet now. Changes polarities like I want it. I can adjust the polarity where I want it. It's, you know, what it's supposed to do. You know, it looks really nice. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that if people still wonder, I've seen a couple people on Sally Guys anywhere, but it's, I think it's pretty much got them all shipped out now from what I know. And for a while there, you didn't have them for sale. They're back up for sale. You can go to his website, titansatellite.com, and I think there's a couple of vendors on eBay and here and there, but they're back going again now, and so they're too pricey or whatever, but they're really worth it. It's they're really nice units to have there.
You know, again, it's
phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
What were you saying, Jeff?
All right, anyway, you know, like I said, ASC1 isn't something I can use personally with a KU dish, but I absolutely cannot understate how impressed I am with Brian and Titanium with the way that they've handled those so far.
Yeah.
You know, with the initial problems and sending out free units, letting the customers keep the original ones, and even posting instructions on how to fix that, you know, to fix your original one. It's unheard of.
Yeah, you don't hear about that no more. Nobody does that. They say, oh, well, screw you or whatever, you know. And glad you got one first and appreciate it, but we got the new ones, you know, ready to go. So buy that one now. Anyway, I've been curious about this secret project you got going on. Anything you can talk about that tonight, or
Yep, I've been authorized by the owner over in Europe that I can start talking about it in public, but we're still releasing very few details. But basically what we're looking at and what the future is going to be is Android-based DVB-S to STVs.
Yeah. I've been hearing the same thing. Not necessarily from you, but that's what I've been...
I've been working on this on my own for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And the main problem has been, you know, other than there's a lot of cheap hardware out there and a lot of half coders, you know, the main problem has been getting DVB-S and DVB-S2 to work decently on an Android platform.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have one here now that solved that, and on top of it, it's not a plastic-shelled tinker toy,
right,
like a lot of them are. This is an actual built STV with a metal case, and, you know, it's the size of a, it's a little bigger than an S10 or an Alien 1. Very nice hardware. Got a very, very large Cortex A9, I think, based 2500 processor with an 800 megahertz GPU on there. And to talk about the first question everyone's going to ask, does it do 422?
Well,
I've already rooted the one I have out here and put in the stuff. I have 422 SD working flawless. I have...
Works on the fly.
What's that?
It'll work live. The box code is live right to your TV. You can go to, you know, download it and watch it on something else. You're saying it's going to work right on the fly.
Yeah, you hook your satellite into it and watch it.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, a lot of the alley boxes, you can record 422 and watch them on the computer or something, whatever, but you're saying this one works,
No. We don't want to do that. We want to watch it live, don't we?
Right, that's why I'm asking. This one does it live. All right. That's what I'm talking about.
I have the SD 422 working with my rooted version.
Yeah.
Now, I ran the CBS 422 HD through it.
Yeah.
And ran into some problems because the way I did it, you know, with Android, I don't particularly need the engineers most of the time because I can go through and on a rooted box, I can go through and tear it apart and redo a lot of it myself.
Oh, yeah. Big difference, yeah.
The HD, I think, is going to need the GPU, and I bypass the GPU to get the SD to work good. So the engineers have our CBS 422 transport stream samples. We'll just have to tie in whatever to the GPU to get that to work good. It played. It just played like it was in slow motion. You know, there wasn't enough power with just running software decoding on it. But of course, you know, we'll get that working, and I'd like to see it working before we think about releasing it for North America.
Yeah.
But, you know, on top of satellite and 422, it's Android based, so it runs thousands of apps.
Oh, yeah.
You got Netflix. You got Hulu Plus. You got Filmon. You got Navi X. You got Skype. You can throw on there. You can do everything and anything with this box. And we're not, you know, with a lot of these.
Yeah.
What I'm dealing with now, we're not talking about, you know, a couple production samples. This is fully ready hardware. We're at the end stages now of basically working out some software bugs and tweaking and changing things to our liking. So this is a realistic box that actually works.
Right. This ain't a pipe dream. Because you're right, there's so many of them out there. I didn't go to CES this year, but I've heard about there's a lot of them at CES, and you can go on the a lot of China websites and stuff, and you can order these things and order a couple on eBay here and there, but they're just junk when you get them. They just, you know, they're just junk. I mean, it's not, the software is not set up right. You know, the firmware is not running right, and it's just, it's aggravation. You think, ah, this is crap, you know, and so what you've got here, you're saying, is actually in the final stage, is getting ready to actually be something that's going to be usable and not ridiculed as another piece of junk. This is very exciting. I don't know if I got enough, but this is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is a production unit, and you know, there's another one that I had one of the production samples from about a year ago.
Yeah.
It's a I'm not going to mention the brand name.
Right.
And it's not available in the U.S. anyway, but, you know, this thing was all real fancy and runs XBMC, but it was Linux-based.
Yeah.
The thing's a toilet. And
right.
It's been released in Europe, and it was on the cover of Telesat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The thing is an absolute toilet. It's horrible.
Yeah.
What I have here... it's just, you know, compared to anything out there is, you know, in my opinion, no less than revolutionary.
Right. Well, let's get down to the brass tacks. Okay, so this thing comes out. You get all the bugs worked out and you release it. And for the average person who's for their user and don't care about, you know, Netflix, Hulu, or whatever, and other apps, which I'm sure they'll get. Now they've got the option to, they'll probably use it, but as far as just a regular set-top box, well, that blind scanning and all that stuff, how's that? Is that software? Is that hardware-based blind scanning, and how does it work?
Okay, they don't have blind scan in there yet. That's on the, there's a four-point list being dealt with right now. That was, of course, the first one I put on my list.
Right.
So the software blind scan's coming. The processor has more than enough power where if it comes down to brute forcing with a software blind scan, it'll do just fine.
Right.
Our Alien 1 with the 450 megahertz processor has a software blind scan, and that thing runs circles, accuracy, and speed-wise around a lot of the set-top boxes that are out today.
Right.
So if Amico can do that with an Alien 1 software blind scan.
Yeah.
Whatever these guys come up with on this hardware is going to really kick butt.
Oh, yeah. Because it's worlds different, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're going from, you know, relatively weak processors in the current generation of legacy STBs to stuff with, you know, quite a bit of power.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you could probably, you know, I can't say without seeing the end product here, but you could probably build a software blind scan that will outrun any piece of hardware that we currently have on the market in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I was being the reporter here. I'm running the show here, so I'm like, so now what can you do with this? But, yeah, I know. You're right. Because I've been, following stuff. Go ahead.
Let me address another part of your question there, or where I think you're going with it. To me, this box is going to be like an Alien or an Alien 2. If you're a guy that just wants to watch satellite and doesn't need you know, the IPTV and the Netflix and, you know, the web browser and all that.
Yeah.
Don't bother with it. Get yourself a mini HD or a nano or something that is meant to do just satellite and save a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
This, you know, this is going to be the full package that does everything. It's not you know, it's not meant to be an exclusive satellite receiver.
Right. Yeah, if you get down to it, I mean, there's, it's one of those things that everybody wants to know what do 422. Every new box comes out, what do 422. No, it won't do 422. I mean, not when you're talking about, but this box and that box comes out, no, it won't do 422. And I found out a lot of these people have never even watched 422. But they've heard about it so much that they, well, I want to have it. And then when they get a box that'll do 422 that, you know, works properly, works good enough, they find out that, I know a guy locally who was about 10 miles up the road from me. He went and got a AZ Box Premium or whatever, something he got from Rick. And, one of those AZ boxes, and he said, "Well, I spent $300 on that thing. Boy, it's got the dual tuners in it and all this stuff." And I got it, and you know, he said, "It's kind of aggravating to use the thing. You got to get used to it." And he said, "It's complicated." And he said, "And when it comes down to it, I never used 422." He said, "I go back to." Using, I think he uses a Micro HD and a S9 or something, an open box S9. And he said, "I still use those more than that, except for football season comes up, I'll try to scan 422. Other than that," he said, "I don't even fool with it." He said, "It's kind of," he said, this is me, him talking in person. He said, "It's kind of a waste of money." Yeah.
Well, and you know, Michael, you know, I used to sell the Premium HD Plus. Through Rick's satellite.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. It was the one that had the dual tuners in. It's the one he bought.
You know, I talked more people out of buying that because it was a very, you know, it's still expensive, but it was a very expensive unit at the time.
Right.
But basically, you know, I would go through a short question list with the customer. What do you want to watch on 422?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but I want it. All right, well,
yeah.
That's $385, or since you don't know what you want to watch on it, it's probably nothing or very little.
Yeah.
Or we got an S9 here for $160 or $170 or whatever they went through at the time. Just about everyone bought the S9.
Yeah. It's just the human nature. They hear something. And, okay, it's actually really, really legal, and I can really get that without, you know, feeling like, okay, I'm, you know, this is something I, you know, because I, you know, knew plenty of people would try to steal Dish and DirecTV in the day, and they kind of, they'd look around, and, you know, they talk about it, they look left and right, and, oh, yeah, okay, what I'm trying to do is, do you really think an FBI agent's actually looking around the corner at you? But anyway, and I want it. I don't know why I want it, but I want it. And I'm,
here's the deal with this, the new STB, and I'll throw a grainy top secret picture on Bridge FTA later tonight, just so, you know, people can kind of see it. But 422 on Android is a side effect. It is not, it's not like Asbox where they say, oh, we got 422. But everything else, you know, pretty much sucks on it.
Yeah.
With Android, it's just another side effect that's, you know, kind of natural to the box. So, you know, eventually we'll have it in the production unit where it works, but it's not the big selling feature. It's just another thing that, oh, by the way, you know, I can do this and you don't have to pay a premium price to get it.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be a good selling point. You know, it's not... You're not pushing it as a 422 box. Oh, guess what? It's 422. Oh, guess what? By the way, it's 422. And, oh, it's the only box that do 422. And 422, you get sick of hearing it. It's like, yeah, this box does this, that, and the other. And, well, yeah, I'll do 422. You know, what else you want to know about it? You know, yeah, by the way, yeah, we'll do it. But, you know, and it's going to, I mean, I think it's once... You get your box straightened out, and I'm sure other people can come along with them. It's actually, you know, get them straightened out for the North American market and get the firmware running right. It's going to be the, you know, way it's going to go in the future, I think. And they're still going to be their plain Jane set-top boxes. But it's going to be
That's the thing with an Android-based box, too, is let's say free-to-air in North America ends tomorrow.
Yeah.
that ends frickin' just about every set-top box that's on the market right now. This
right.
one still does all the Android functions, you know, the DNLA, the home networking, the, you know, thousands of streaming channels and video on demand, you know, going to NBC site or whatever and watching television programs. This box does everything that a Roku does, except it can do 100 times more than a Roku can do.
Right.
So exactly. It'd be real hard to make it obsolete anytime soon.
Right. Thing, you know, it's, I'm going to buy this box, and it's going to be obsolete in 2 years, and they come out with this, that, and the other. Now, that box, I just got a question. I mean, it ain't going to concern anybody in North America about us. Will it do the DVB-T, like over in Europe and stuff?
DBS what?
DVB-S T.
Oh, DVB-T, terrestrial.
Yeah.
No, this
yeah.
is this is a, it's a single tuner DVB-S 2. Now, that doesn't mean, in knowing Europe, they'll probably come out with a twin tuner that has DVB-T support. But as of right now, what I have and what we're going to be offering is a single tuner DVB-S 2 only.
Okay. Because
but
people in Europe's going to be wondering about, mate, listen to this, will it do, you know.
Well, here's another thing about Android. You can plug things into the USB ports on the thing, such as your $20 DVB-T or T2 tuner.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have the support built in for it right now. But it's Android. It's not hard to do.
Right. It could be done, yeah. There's
and that's
that.
The same
right
that's the
that.
Same thing with United States ATSC and over there.
Yeah.
If we find a nice plug in USB OTA tuner.
Yeah.
It's probably just a matter of me sending one and sending a Linux driver pack over
yep.
to the engineers and
yep.
saying, hey, make this work.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I like about the Android. You know, and, you know, this is kind of off base what we're talking about, but I think the other day where Wozniak from Apple was pushing again about Apple should also come out with an Android-based cell phone and a tablet because, you know, he realizes how much, you know, more that's out there with it, you know. And he's kind of right. You know, of course, he's probably thinking of money and dollars in his eyes, but, yeah, Apple's got their own proprietary stuff and whatever, but if you had, say you had an Apple iPhone or whatever, and you could run apps iPhone from, iPhone apps and or Android from the Google Play Store, you know, and it's, you know, how much more money would you make? People would, well, I didn't want an iPhone because of this, but now I'm going to get one because I can go to Google Play Store or I can, you know.
You know, I absolutely hate iCrap and
I know.
iPods and iPhones and all that, but, you know, he might be onto something. And
yeah.
Apple does have experience with, you know, doing emulators that will run Windows and all that. They
yeah.
shouldn't make an Android-based phone. They should keep their proprietary system that they can rate
yeah.
people cost-wise over and put in an APK emulator that will run in that'll run Android apps.
Yeah. That's what he was getting at. I was reading on something, and first I thought it was one of those online tabloids, but I got to read a couple other places. It was no, it was real. It was some summit or something he was at or some kind of meeting or something he was at or something. He actually was talking about it. And I was like, well, that's, you know, of course, a lot of Apple, you know, true diehard Apple people was, you know, shooting it down and saying, oh, that's stupid, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, but he's right.
Apple probably can never get over their superiority complex that they have, that
yeah.
their products are so much better.
Oh, yeah.
They probably have too much pride to
put in an Android emulator, at least at this point. You know,
at this
once they keep losing market share to lower cost Android devices that have more features, they might eventually get there. But.
Yeah, at this point you're right. Their pride's sort of too much, and you know, but what he said was, we can make three devices, and that's what they, you know, that's how they sold a lot of them, you know, to young adults and teenagers, was making their interface and the way the phone looks and their, you know, iPads, to make it pretty. And who cares if it functions really well or not? It's pretty, you know. And then, you know, they work on that. And, you know, they've got a lot of stuff that does function well, but, you know, get me wrong there, but that was their thing. And he said, well, okay, we got the pretty, and we'll add that to it. And he said, and we'll have something. And so it was funny reading all the comments from the Apple lovers. It's like, oh, he's gone crazy. We need to kick him out of Apple and bring somebody else in. And they're just so blinded, you know. But anyway.
You know, the NSA code word for the iPhone users is zombies.
Yeah.
Personally, I call them sheep.
Yep. I didn't want to say that, but yep.
Yeah, you probably don't want me going off and offending your Apple users.
Yeah, I don't want to offend my audience here. But, you know, it comes back to the old thing. It's a Ford, Chevy, and Dodge, you know, as far as, you know, American-made stuff. Or, of course, now a lot of parts are made in other countries and assembled in America. But I grew up, you know, around here it was Ford and Chevy mostly. I had a few Dodge people, Mopar fans, but it was Ford and Chevy.
More parts?
No, Mopar.
More parts.
Yeah, I got you now. Yeah, and then the Ford was found on the road dead, and or fix or repair
day. First on race day.
Yeah, I was going to say, or if you like Ford, first on race day. If you didn't like it, it was fix or repair daily, and it was just crazy. And it was a couple of things, actually, for Chevy. I can't even remember, though, because Chevy was a little bit longer, but I actually heard a couple, but I can't remember.
Chevy's owned by Government Motors, so, I mean.
Yeah. That's one of
them. If you want a welfare car that Obama paid for, get yourself a Chevy.
Yeah.
Then, of course, if you want a nice ladies' truck to go get the groceries, your Silverado 1500 works great. Oh, did I say that out loud?
I appreciate you calling in here, and we're getting a... we got less than a minute here left of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and end it. And good show. Enjoyed you calling in. Appreciate it. And maybe we'll have you next week or so when you find some more stuff out or you want to talk more about it. About the new Android box. But I'm sure now it's going to be on Satellite Guys. It's going to be on Euroforum. And people's going to be, well, here's the rumor of what's going on. So to at least get people talking about it and get people asking about it. But appreciate you calling in. Appreciate everything, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I appreciate it. I'll put up, you know, one of the top secret blurry photos on Fridge. You're welcome to carry information over to Satellite Guys. And I'm going to get back to work on the new web TV system for the Alien and Alien 2.
All righty. Well, we'll talk to you later, Joe.
Have yourself a good night, Michael. Thanks a lot.
And everybody else for listening, appreciate everybody listening. And if you're listening to the recording of this, thanks for listening. And we'll have another show next week, same time, Wednesday's 8 p.m. Eastern time here on Blog Talk Radio. And maybe next week we can be on Satellite Guys Radio. Good night, everybody.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
Thank you. And good night.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join those crazy satellite guys, Michael and Dave, next week for another exciting episode of Satellite Nation.
Bye-bye.
I want to see motion and movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.